welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show featuring the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson. Well, hogs are back in the news. Prestige Farms out of North Carolina, the fifth largest pork producer in the nation, was rejected this spring in its bid to build a 10,000-kill processing plant in Mason City, Iowa. It has been courting a new partner in Wright County, southwest of Mason City and due north of Hamilton County. Yesterday, I talked with the economic development director of Wright County about the potential deal with Prestige and also with an organizer from Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement who was recruited by locals to help in their fight against the plant. We'll have those interviews in a moment. Also looking forward to a visit by our resident historian, Alex Pfeiffer, from the Ames Historical Society, who will share an interesting moment in the town gown dynamics of Ames, Iowa, specifically how the town and the university were to be physically connected by road and bridge. But first, let's hear a brief interview from this month's honoree in our Community Appreciation Program, Primary Healthcare. Every month, we use these airwaves to highlight the work of a different local nonprofit. Kay Puddock has the story.
My guest today is Marissa Conrad, who's the Director of Marketing and Fund Development at Primary Healthcare, which has clinics here in Ames and also in Des Moines. And I guess, Marissa, you direct the Des Moines clinic, right?
Correct. And we also have a clinic in Marshalltown as well.
Oh, okay. And we will be hearing from Marissa today. Later in the month, we'll be hearing from someone who knows about the clinic here in Ames. So we'll be hearing more details about the Ames clinic later in the month. Well, Marissa, would you like to tell us about the services you offer?
Sure. It does vary clinic to clinic, but Primary Healthcare is a federally qualified community health center, and what that means is we provide comprehensive primary healthcare to individuals in a medically underserved area, regardless of their ability to pay. So we really specialize in serving folks that are low-income, homeless, or near homeless.
But anyone could come if they wish.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, I understand that included in the services you provide is transportation help and housing assistance. How does that work?
Well, as I mentioned, we specialize in helping low-income folks and the barriers that they have in receiving care. And oftentimes, transportation is an issue. Just getting to an appointment can be difficult. So we have a van that was donated to our clinic just this past spring that we can help transport patients to their appointments. We can transport them to the food pantry if need be. Also for folks right in town, we can provide bus tokens. So we're always looking for ways to sort of help them overcome the barriers that stand in their way to being a healthy individual.
And how about the housing assistance part?
We have a family support worker at the clinic here in Ames that can help individuals enroll in different programs that they might be eligible for and also connect them with shelters, whatever. We meet them where they're at and help them get housed.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you have interpreters for people that don't speak English?
Absolutely. Yes. And I know that we have a provider here in Ames that is a Chinese speaker. Because that's a population here in mm-hmm. town that we see a lot of those folks. And so it's unique to Ames. And just to give an example, in Marshalltown, we have a couple of Burmese interpreters because that's unique to a lot of the folks that they see at their clinic.
Okay. So it's not just Spanish. Now, how about the other services? Can you give us some examples or some particularly interesting stories about the help you've provided?
Well, a unique thing, integrated care is big within our clinics because we know a barrier is getting to the clinic. And so when someone is in the clinic, we want to try and serve them as much as possible. So if a person comes in to have their standard, you know, diabetes sort of checkup, and it's identified that there might be some mental health issues going on, we have behavioral health consultants on staff that can meet them at that appointment that same day. So we don't have to schedule another appointment, ask them to come back at a later date, because that's just another tough thing for them to think about. And so we can meet them where they're at. The behavioral health consultant can come in that day and do an assessment and take treatment from there. So that's definitely a unique service. And so we try and do as much of that as possible as well. So behavioral health, of course, just standard primary care. We want to be a medical home for people and help them manage, you know, those chronic diseases that they have, keep
like
them
diabetes
healthy.
And so
exactly.
On.
And, mm-hmm. and our goal is to keep these folks out of the emergency rooms.
So it makes economic sense, too, if you keep people out of emergency rooms.
Absolutely.
Right.
If you're using the emergency room as your primary care, you're not doing yourself or anyone any favors. But if
right.
you can come in and have a provider that sees you, knows your health, and can help you manage whatever health issue you might be dealing with, you're going to be a much healthier individual in the long run.
And you have prenatal care for pregnant women?
Correct. Mm-hmm. And the Ames Clinic here in town, and I know our clinic director can speak to this later in the month, but we do have a midwife on staff, and she's can provide prenatal and OB care.
Okay. Is there anything else that people should know in general about the clinic and the primary health care?
Well, I would just like to say, you know, we've been serving patients and strengthening the community for over 35 years. We started in Des Moines, and we're new to Ames relatively in the last couple of years, but we have deep experience with working with Central Iowans who, you know, are low-income, homeless, or near homeless. I would really say that we specialize in that population. Mm-hmm. We treat them with dignity and respect.
And as you say, meet them where they're at with transportation help, housing help.
Absolutely.
Help getting to the food pantry.
Absolutely.
And so on.
And we do see, you know, folks with insurance, or maybe they're just underinsured.
Mm-hmm.
We have health benefit specialists as well that can help get, if someone comes in, says, I don't have insurance, and we can sit down with them and identify, well, you might be eligible for Medicaid. Let's see if we can get you enrolled. So we can provide help there. And those folks are bilingual. So it's a great service.
Right.
And
right.
another unique thing to primary health care.
Mm-hmm. So once again, this is a service provided for low-income people with help with housing, transportation, interpreters, OB care, behavioral or mental health care, all sorts of services provided.
Correct. And family medicine, primary care.
I've been talking to Marissa Conrad of primary health care. Later in the month, we'll be talking to someone who knows more about the specific services here in Ames. And you have clinics, I should have said this too. You have clinics in Ames, Des Moines, and Marshalltown, did you say?
That's correct. We have medical and dental clinics, in Des Moines and Marshalltown as well. Ames is a medical clinic only, but we do provide dental care in Des Moines and Marshalltown.
Okay.
And that was KHOI reporter Kay Puddock speaking with Marissa Conrad, the Director of Primary Health Care of Central Iowa. You're listening to Local Talk. I'm Greta Anderson. Back in April and May, I reported on the surprise turn of events when Mason City Council, after several extended public hearings, decided by a single vote to reject the bid of Prestige Farms, a family-owned corporation, to build a large new slaughterhouse within their city limits. Prestige Farms is based in North Carolina, a state whose legislators placed a moratorium on the building of new hog confinements in 2007 after the Chesapeake Bay became contaminated with waste. Since then, Prestige has been building confinements in Iowa. This year alone, Prestige has filed permits with the state of Iowa for 40 new hog confinements, presumably to supply the processing plant it still hopes to build. After two short months, Prestige is back with its proposal for a slaughterhouse, this time for Wright County, the county just north of adjacent Hamilton County to the north of us. This proposed slaughterhouse is designed to kill and process 10,000 hogs per shift. It will start with one shift, but the Prestige family hopes to increase to two shifts within a year or two. The plan is for 2,000 employees to be employed there, this in a county whose total population, including children and the elderly, is only 13,000. Yesterday, I visited with the Economic Development Director of Wright County, Bryce Davis, and one of the Wright County supervisors to see why they thought Prestige Farms was right for Wright. I'm talking with Bryce Davis, the Director of Economic Development of Wright County, and Carl Helgevold, a member of the Board of Supervisors of Wright County. You have three supervisors there up in Wright County?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. So we heard the news, I read the news a couple weeks ago maybe, that Prestige Farms, having been turned down by the citizens of Mason City, for a large hog processing facility up there has been in negotiations with you there in Wright County to locate the processing plant there. Can you tell me where you are in those negotiations?
We are structuring the paperwork so that we can bring those to the public and get feedback from the public at our public hearings for the development agreement, which will state the county's participation in the project and the company's participation. Will be July 25th at 9:30 at the Wright County Courthouse in Clarion. And then also there will be a couple more after that, most likely August 1st, depending on the discussions that take place during those public hearings with comments from the public. That depends on how many there will be and how satisfied the Board of Supervisors are with the development agreement and or against the development agreement. So we do have some final negotiations to do in the next couple weeks, but we're going to get that information out to the public as soon as it's complete, so we have enough time to get their feedback and their comments and their concerns and address those in an appropriate dialogue.
One of the sticking points up in Mason City was the large subsidy that the city was prepared to give, the tax abatement that the city was prepared to give the company. Will there be a subsidy of that type involved in the agreement with Wright County?
There has to be some sort of local participation, local match, in order to receive the state of Iowa incentives that were approved. We still have to reapply for such incentives, which is basically, it's just a sales tax refund. So it's not like the company is going to get upfront dollars. So they actually have to invest in Iowa in order to receive some of that money back. In addition, there's a lot of job training dollars with Iowa Central Community College to go to train employees with confined spaces, hazmat, fire protection, job safety, things of that nature. And Iowa Central is going to get that money to train those employees. So if there weren't any employees coming to this plant, then that money would not be available from the state. So there will be some sort of local participation in this project. I can guarantee that it will not be as much as what Mason City was going to provide, and we're still finalizing the deal to get that number and make sure it makes sense for the project and for Wright County.
What about the infrastructure? A plant like that, 10,000 kill per shift and possibly two shifts per day, requires a lot of water and produces a lot of waste.
Yep. With potable water, they do have to get approved for a permit to draw water from an aquifer. The DNR preliminary geological survey and their data suggests that there is actually more water in a more abundance of water quality here in Wright County than there would have been in Mason City. There are less people drawing from that aquifer, so they believe this is a prime location for it. Regarding the waste will be provided by the Eagle Grove wastewater treatment plant. We're still in negotiations with that, but Prestige is a terrific company that is willing to work with us to make sure that there's skin in the game for all parties involved, and they're willing to sign agreements and guarantees and put up real property as collateral. So from the waste side of things, we're going to have a pretreatment agreement so we can make sure that solids and nitrates meet the DNR's current and future requirements. But once again, those deals are still being finalized, but the way things are progressing, the Prestige family has been outstanding to deal with, and they understand our situation as a rural county, and they understand their need to be where they know they're going to be successful, where they know they're going to draw the workforce, and that location is just primed for it.
Okay, and when you say that location, this is one close to Eagle Grove?
Yes, it's 5 miles away. It's next to other agribusinesses, and it has a lot of the infrastructure close by, and if you do a 20-mile radius around that site, you're going to hit over 50,000 people with the population centers of Fort Dodge and Webster City and Humboldt and Clarion. And so from the labor shed side of things, if you draw a 20-mile radius around Mason City, it's going to be maybe a little bit more, but it's pretty similar in terms of workforce
availability. Mm-hmm. And just to clarify about the water, from what you said about aquifers, it sounds that Prestige might be drilling its own private well in order to supply the plant with water?
Yes, it'll be a private use well, but they have to do a lot of treatment to that water to make sure that it's food grade. Because this is a food processing plant, they have to have ongoing certifications, they have to have ongoing permits, they have to have ongoing compliance with the DNR and with other organizations such as USDA in order to be able to continue drawing water from the aquifer.
And you've said that they've been really good to work with. Could you explain how you have drawn that conclusion?
Mm-hmm. They've been in Wright County since 2004. They've been great neighbors to Wright County. They buy half of their feed for their Iowa operations from Gold Eagle Cooperative, which is based in Eagle Grove, Iowa. They buy from New Co-op. They buy from a lot of Iowa feed mills around the state, but most of it comes right out of Eagle Grove. They have, like I said, they own 15 hog confinements right now in Wright County. They've been terrific neighbors. They've remediated a lot of hog confinements that they've purchased to make them better from a technology standpoint, from an odor standpoint, and they fly under the radar. In terms of this project, they are actually working with us. They're structuring the deal so that they are providing guarantees. They're providing real property. They're making sure this works. They're not taking every penny from the citizens of Wright County. They actually have dropped the rebate that they would get for taxes substantially from what they were going to get in Mason City. They are putting in a lot of their own infrastructure so that that's not on the hook for citizens of Wright County. There will be some road improvements, and since roads are a public use, we are looking at that by applying for a RISE grant, which will cover 80% of the cost for road improvements. And we're going to be working with the DOT and our engineering department to see what those costs will be like. But we feel that it's going to be a very good deal. It's going to not have as much of an impact on the citizens of Wright County, and Prestige is at the forefront of making sure that the wastewater treatment facility of Eagle Grove actually cash flows into a nice profit center so Eagle Grove can have money for public safety, for social costs, and things of that nature. Wright County is looking at assisting the Eagle Grove School District with facility improvements to add more classrooms to prepare for student enrollment, and that's why I believe that Prestige is a great family to do business with.
Okay. You mentioned the schools. That was going to be my next question. You're saying that some of the revenue that the county gets from the wastewater treatment will then be turned around and applied to the schools?
No. It's in the school district, so they'll get a lot of tax dollars from the property valuation of the plant to go towards student growth. But they're going to... The school budget is always a year behind based on the October 1st count of the previous year. And our goal is to make sure that they have the money up front to do any facility upgrades, to make sure that there's enough classrooms to prepare for any type of student enrollment. We've been able to get the regional superintendents together and discuss student growth, but specifically with Eagle Grove, we have a building where our community school district is located that can house an additional 220 students, give or take. And so we are very comfortable that we can accomplish the growth in the short term. And that's what we want to make sure that we provide enough funding so it doesn't cause any type of issues with our school district. The city of Eagle Grove will actually get a lot of money from the wastewater plant, which they can use for other city expenses. When there's population growth in the city, obviously, we want to look at building housing, and those tax dollars will go to the city of Eagle Grove, and they'll be able to put towards public safety. They'll be able to put it towards libraries, museums, convention centers, things of those, and parks, of course, and things of those natures. But we just want to make sure that the wastewater plant cash flows nicely for the city of Eagle Grove, so they can capture those dollars and put it back into the city to enhance the quality of life and to grow the population.
Okay, I get the picture now. Thanks. So, again, the housing was you keep anticipating my questions. The housing was the next question. Do you feel that the influx of population, do you think the existing housing is going to be able to handle that? How rapidly can your housing grow? I noticed from your website that you had just done a housing study in Wright County.
Yes, we definitely need to revamp that, though, to accommodate potential growth. We did a housing study with Iowa State recently that basically looked at the availability of housing, and the data is a little bit old, and that was during our high unemployment season because we're a very egg-based economy, so we fluctuate with the egg market. And I believe that data showed that we had about 1,000 houses that are available for sale or for rent in Wright County. And that means that we will need about 279 more housing units, whether they're single family or multifamily, just in Wright County's market. Now, when we look at the site that we've proposed, we will capture Fort Dodge housing market, Webster City's housing market, and all the other towns in between and around Wright County and surrounding counties. Therefore, we need to build. We understand that we need to improve our housing stock and the availability of quality housing and affordable housing, but we are going to look to our regional partners and make sure that everybody prospers from this development.
Okay, and you mentioned that Wright County is a agricultural employer. Many people who are employed by agriculture and certainly those anticipated to be employed by the processing plant are of Hispanic origin. Are there already a lot of folks in Wright County whose, like kids whose parents speak Spanish and who might be growing up bilingual and entering the schools?
Yes, the Eagle Grove School District is primed with cultural diversity. They're excited for the growth. They understand English as a second language. Our valedictorian this year was Hispanic, and they work hard, they try hard, and they're assimilating to the culture quite nicely. There is 10% of Wright County is Hispanic based on the latest indicators. We understand that there's going to be a influence of different demographics inside of a packing plant, but this company has one-third of the turnover that most companies have in this industry because they try to be an employer of choice. When you look at their wages, the wages for most of the individuals are going to be between $13 and $15 an hour. Their average wage is $15.71 an hour. They pay overtime. Most egg companies are exempted from overtime pay. They actually pay overtime in their hog confinements that they currently have on the ground. They will pay time and a half in this plant as well. They provide health benefits, life insurance benefits. They do a matching 401k. Their benefits package is competitive, if not better than a lot of different food processing organizations out there. We understand we have a culturally diverse county, and we will accept any individual that is willing to work hard for their family and to be law-abiding citizens. And, right now, we don't exactly know what the division of the workforce is going to be inside that plant, but I can tell you that they need microbiologists, they need engineers, they need operators, they need machinists, they need accountants, they need HR, they need managers. There's a lot of high-tech automation, and there's a lot of moving parts that require programming and electronics in this plant. They have automated saws. They have automated high-pressure water jets to cut meat. So this is a very high-tech, state-of-the-art facility. And why I can't, tell you exactly what the percentage is going to be for each demographic, I can tell you that they need quality, skilled workers for this plant, and they want to be an employer of choice, and I firmly believe that they will be. I firmly believe that they'll get the workforce at the wages that they are presenting to the state of Iowa and the Iowa Economic Development Authority. But once again, it's 2 years out, and we have 2 years to plan, and we have 2 years to recruit. But there, you know, there already is a section of Wright County that is diverse, and we accept that. Our police chief in Eagle Grove is of Hispanic descent from Texas, and we have in our banks, in our city hall, we have bilingual individuals. In our school district, we have bilingual individuals. We are prepared and ready to accept this challenge and grow our community in a positive manner.
Interesting. So the remaining complaint or concern that folks up in Mason City area had was the potential or the probability of expansion of hog confinements in the county and surrounding counties, that the existing stock of hogs could not possibly fulfill the 10,000 a day quota that the plant would have, and certainly not the 20,000 for two shifts. And so how do you feel about that? Do you think that will be one of the major concerns of citizens who come to these meetings on July 25th and August 1st?
Yep. Iowa State University did a hog outlook study that said most of the hogs today go out of state. They go to JBS in Worthington. They go to Hormel in Austin. They go to John Morrell in Sioux Falls. They go to Fremont, Nebraska, and they go to St. Joe, Missouri. If we build this packing plant here in Wright County, 60% are already produced by the Prestige family. That ranges from Cherokee, give or take, to Grinnell, all across north central Iowa. And they're going to produce already 60% of the first shift operations. We believe that with more pork processing plants that are buying independent farmers' hog production, they will get a better price per head of hog, and therefore it comes down to a freight issue. If they can bring their hogs to this site cheaper than what they can out of state, they will do that. We believe that the first shift operations are already in place. Iowa has a lot of hogs already on the ground growing. They go out of state to get processed. This is just one value-added portion of a prosperous industry that really has an opportunity to provide high-quality protein to not only the state of Iowa, but to the country and the world.
Okay. Well, I think I've put you through your paces, Mr. Davis. Carl Hugeland?
I think Bryce actually did real well.
Do you anticipate, Supervisor Hugeland, do you anticipate some citizen concern at these meetings?
I would hope there's at the meetings there would be people that would voice their concerns. I think that's what a public hearing's for, to get the facts out and hear the positives and the negatives. I think that's just part of the due process that we're going to have here in Wright County when the hearings start on the 25th.
And you're open to extending hearings if there are still a lot of, inflamed feelings and the sense of unanswered questions beyond the August 1st second hearing?
Well, I think, you cannot bring something like this to a community and not let the people, voice their concerns. And I don't think that can be done at any one meeting. I think you would need at least two on that. And then at that point, we'll see just where we're at, and we'll decide then. But I would not be comfortable with trying to do this in a one-meeting situation. I don't think that would be fair for anybody.
Well, thank you so much for spending some time with me, and we'll be watching and listening to see how these meetings go.
Wonderful. Thank you for your time.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Greta Anderson, and that was a conversation I had yesterday with officials from Wright County, where Prestige Farms has announced its plans to build a 10,000-kill hog processing plant if the public accepts their bid. The Branstad administration has taken a stance on this project, planning to support it with millions of dollars of tax abatements, which, as we heard, requires a local match. We also heard about state money being used to train employees and to help with the building of roads, and the county officials' belief that no new slaughterhouses will need to be built to supply the plant. Without having all of the details, the residents of Wright County are not so sure. I spoke yesterday with Jess Mazur, an organizer from Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, an organization that has been a longtime opponent of hog confinements and industrial agriculture in the state of Iowa. ICCI assisted the people of Mason City in their fight against the Prestige Farms processing plant this spring. Here's Jess Mazur.
Yeah, we had, once they announced that they were going to build near Eagle Grove, we received a lot of phone calls from community members up there. And so we organized a meeting last night, and, you know, over 50 people showed up to the meeting. They're angry, they don't want it, and they're ready to do what it's going to take to stop it from building there.
What were some of the most commonly stated objections to the plant?
Yeah, I think people are really concerned about more factory farms building in the area. A lot of the people that showed up live near factory farms. They know the impact that it has on their lives, on their health, on their communities, on the environment. Another thing that people were bringing up quite a bit is that these are not good jobs. These are not jobs that attract people long-term to Wright County. These are low-paying, high-injury, non-union jobs. And then also they don't want public money going to the fifth largest pork producer in the country. This is Iowa's taxpayer money. We should be using it to build our communities, to invest in small businesses that pay living wages and that make people want to come to a community. And no one's going to say, I'm looking for a small town. Let's find one with a slaughterhouse in it.
I'm wondering, you know, there are a couple of meetings scheduled, and the economic development team over at in Wright County, they seem to have a lot of answers. I just talked with them. Will opponents of the plant simply say no, or will there be perhaps some negotiation, like we would accept this plant if it allowed union jobs or something like that?
No, I think they don't want it. They've been impacted by this industry so much that they understand what it can do and how that means there's going to be more factory farms, that they're flat out, no, we don't want this. They said we don't even want it in Iowa. It's not just Wright County. We don't want this in Iowa.
Wright County is fairly densely populated with hogs already?
Yeah, there's just a few over 100 confinements in Wright County already. And, you know, just driving, when we were driving to the meeting that was in Clarion last night, about 5 miles outside of town is a factory farm that right next to the highway, and it reeks in its Prestige. It's a Prestige factory farm. So they're very familiar with Prestige and this industry.
Okay, so while the economic development director says Prestige has been a good neighbor, there are folks up there who would disagree.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The one right outside of Clarion, I mean, driving past, you roll up your windows, hold your breath until you get into town. And I'm sure if the wind's in the right direction, they're smelling that too.
Any other concerns that were expressed? You know, the Prestige tried to paint the opposition in Mason City as an issue of culture and race. Was there discussion about the type of people who might be attracted to this work?
No, I think everyone's on the same page that, you know, all people have dignity. And we can be upset with big corporations that exploit their workers, but it's not the workers. It's, you know, people are trying to make a living. People are trying to support their families, and there are better ways to do that than a slaughterhouse. So, no, it's not about the people. It's about the corporation. Everyone there said, you know, all human beings have dignity.
Okay. Any other comments about this meeting that you held last night?
Yeah, I think one other point that I guess I forgot to mention that people were raising, too, is just, Prestige is only in this for the money. They are going to externalize costs onto the community in every way possible. There's going to be hundreds of trucks coming in and out of this slaughterhouse every day, and who's going to pay to fix the roads? It's going to be the taxpayers. These are high-injury jobs, and short-term disability doesn't kick in for a year of unemployment. And so when someone is injured, they're going to be out of work, and then the community is going to have to support the family. And when people are injured, it's going to be on the backs of taxpayers. you know, the needs of the schools to make sure that children have a quality education is going to be on the backs of the taxpayers. So there's going to be so many instances where they are externalizing their costs onto Iowans while they're getting the profits, they're getting the benefits, they don't live here. I really strongly don't believe that they truly care about the quality of life in that community.
Again, that is Jess Mazur from Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, describing a meeting she had with 50 people in Wright County on Wednesday night who opposed the building of a slaughterhouse near Eagle Grove. Citizens who, as she says, have already been greatly affected by the hog industry and don't want to see it expand further. You're listening to Local Talk. When we come back, local historian Alex Pfeiffer with a curiosity in the never-ending saga of town-gown relationships.
Something impossible. Let's do something grand. Let's bet it all on one horse. 'Cause you and me, we're gonna win, of course. Like Paris in 1943, honestly, honestly, it was a miracle.
William Elliott Whitmore, a Southern Iowan musician, and this is Local Talk. I'm Greta Anderson. We're joined for the remainder of the hour by Alex Pfeiffer of the Ames Historical Society, who has a story about connection, literally, between the town of Ames and the campus of Iowa State. This all started because of this summer's closure of the 6th Avenue Bridge, a route that many of us take when we're going back and forth between these two locations. Susan Guiazda, public relations officer of Ames, says that the bridge is due to open after repairs on August 1st. So to celebrate the reopening, we asked Alex to look into its history. Alex, what can you tell us about that bridge?
Yeah, well, for most of Ames' history, the first 50 years especially, the only way from downtown to campus or vice versa was Boone Road, or as you know it today, Lincoln Way. So we had that Squaw Creek Bridge mainly as our one thoroughway through town, unless you went way out in the country and went on some rickety old bridges. But unfortunately, in 1918, we had a big flood in town. It shouldn't be news to anyone that it floods here. And the Squaw Creek Bridge was knocked out a month after the flood. It was weakened by the structure. And at that point, we had the county was mostly responsible for taking care of bridges, and so they were a little slow to get to it. And the Highway Commission was literally just founded, and so they weren't quite in the position yet to just take over that rebuild.
The State Highway.
The State Highway Commission. So, yeah, it'd be known as the Highway Commission, later renamed the Iowa DOT.
Right.
Here in town.
So how were people getting across the river? Just like wading through it or what?
Well, at that point we had the electric trolley, which was taking passengers from downtown to college, so you could get through there. After the bridge went out, they did put up a wooden bridge that was a one-laner. So it was a little bit tedious to get through there. So there was a way to get through, but it was slow and laborious. At that time, an extension on 6th Street was a popular choice for people. They were already realizing that, hey, we need just more than one way across campus. You know, what if another bridge goes out? But there were some people that opposed the 6th Street extension. Some farmers that had cattle nearby didn't want automobiles driving by and scaring them. And also ISC President Charles Curtis wasn't in favor of it because it would go through his sheep pasture.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Okay, so those would probably be the, like, what is now Brookside Park, these pastures and cattle lots?
Yep, near that area, yep. And probably on the west side of what we now call University Avenue. There have been some pastures right there, all in that little floodplain kind of
the
area.
The Frisbee fields.
Yeah, the intramural fields right by Maple Willow Larch, yeah. So after 2 years of a new bridge not being put in 1920, the State Board of Education gave an ultimatum. They said, Ames must rebuild the Squaw Creek Bridge and pave Lincoln Way before asking for land to extend 6th Street, because the State Board of Education would have had to give some of the land to the city to be able to put the bridge in and the road connecting it to campus. So been a little bit on their property. Ames voted yes for a $15,000 bond to build the bridge, and it was on the city council's agenda, but it just went nowhere. Kept getting on the agenda, but nothing ever kept getting done.
Now, they had to pave Lincoln Way? Lincoln Way wasn't paved
yet?
Yeah,
Lincoln Way wasn't paved then. It would have been dirt. And we didn't get our first paved street until 1910. Main Street was done. And they weren't actually paved with clay bricks. They used wooden blocks. So they're just little wood blocks, and they soaked them in creosote, kind of like, you know, they do with railroad ties, basically. And so they had done that, and eventually had gotten 1915, they did quite a bit of the downtown area, and then, but they still hadn't gotten it all the way over to the college quite yet.
Okay.
So 1920, we still have no bridge. We're going to flash forward to March 1922, and Dean Anson Marston, Ames City Council, the Board of Education, and the Highway Commission come to a compromise to extend 9th Street, actually, instead of extending 6th Street because of the issues with the pastures and the farmers. And that would have extended over to the north-south drive that we now know today as Stang Road. So the next year, the board is to give final approval for it. Mayor Tom Rice, City Attorney J.Y. Luke, and Councilman Galen Tilden drove to Iowa City to attend the meeting. They were told that Luke and Mr. Tilden could enter the meeting, but Mr. Rice was not allowed.
Wait a second.
Yeah, believe it or not, he was not allowed to this meeting. And it kind
of... This is like a meeting of the Iowa Board of Regents, what we would call today.
Yeah, the State Board of Education. Yeah, and they were not... Yeah, they didn't allow him, and the reason they didn't let him go in was... It actually goes back to 2 months before that. In May, Rice had given a speech to 1,500 ISC students, gathered on campus, and drove them to Near Riot.
Near Riot?
Near Riot, yes. At this time, the Athletic Council and President Pearson had requested that the athletic director, Charles Macer, resign. And the students were not too happy about that. The reason that they wanted him to resign was that he was a former football coach, and they were unhappy right now with the turnover of football coaches, because it was, I think we had three coaches in 3 years, and then they were just not happy. They wanted.
They must have had some losing seasons in there.
Yeah, I think so. I think they weren't doing too bad, but
sounds
they were
familiar, huh?
They just wanted some stability. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so the students wanted some continuity. The college kept on firing their losing football coaches, and the city councilman was the rabble-rouser leading the students in this riot against the administration?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the majority of the students, the townspeople, and especially Mayor Rice had come out to Macer's defense. They were just, you know, I think they were friends. He was a well-liked person, I think, except for for a few political ways that he was dealing with his football coaches, and they were not too happy. So because of this, a student organization asked Rice, the mayor, to speak at a mass meeting on campus where he stated to these 1,500 kids, "If your forces stick together, you can win your fight. The students have been cowed and should go ahead with their demonstration. Furthermore, no college president nor any college or university on earth can expel an entire student body." So you can see why the state board was probably a little mad at Rice for that one.
Okay.
Yeah, so after he gives that speech on Central Campus, then the students march onto the Knoll, of course, with shouts of, "We want Macer," and "What about Macer?" Guns were fired, and even a window was broken at the Knoll.
My goodness.
Yeah. So the president calms them down, and they do eventually march on to another faculty member to go bug him, and he calms them down, and the students eventually depart around midnight or so. So, to say the least, the Board of Education was not really happy with Rice for kind of poking his finger in there, and so they did not allow him to enter that meeting that day in Iowa City, and so the 9th Street plans were rejected.
He was the main proponent of the 9th Street plan?
Yeah. And, yeah, he came there with the city to kind of get us going on it because they had been dragging their feet. And so instead they rejected the 9th Street plan and instead proposed a plan to extend 13th Street.
13th Street. Wait, ding, 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 ding. I think we have a 13th Street extension.
Exactly. Yeah, that sounds a little bit more normal than 9th, right? So the 13th Street was approved. Now, a year later, 1924, Rice loses a very, very close election to Frank Schletter, maybe a name that might sound familiar to some of you, only by like 126 votes or something like that. It was very, very close. And so the next year, 1925, Mayor Schletter and several council members again drove to Iowa City to meet with the state board. A final agreement was reached on 13th Street with a 17.5-foot wide wooden bridge over Squaw Creek. And that is... So let's see. And then the road was completed on February 23rd, 1926. We have a 13th Street extension finally. And I remember this is just a gravel road with a wooden bridge, too. So it's nothing, you know, that great. So that kind of ends the argument there for a while until the 1940s when, you know, the town is starting to expand a lot more and we're realizing we need more than just one paved road with a bridge, which would be Lincoln Way. And extension on the north edge of town, which was just gravel and a one-lane bridge, essentially. So there's two things that kind of come about in the mid-40s that kind of get street extensions on the city mind again. In October of 1946, there was a pedestrian death at Lincoln Way and Beach because of the very congested road that was there. And in December of 1946, a few months later, an ice jam knocked out the wooden bridge on 13th Street. So here we are again, down to just one little way through town. And the road remained closed for a year until 47, resulting on heavy traffic on Lincoln Way. And so they were seeing the congestion down there. So in the spring of 1948, an agreement was made to extend and pave 6th Street. And on September 24th, 1948, a ceremony was held officially opening the 6th Street Bridge to campus. Former Ames Mayor Clint Adams was there to cut the ribbon. And a little funny note, too, with that, a few weeks later, after they decided to extend, completely build 6th Street through, create the bridge, 2 weeks later, they paved the gravel road on 13th Street to complete that bridge that way also through town. So within 49, we got two nice paved ways through there.
Okay.
It's quite the battle to get one little extension through town, isn't it?
Definitely. Now, I just have to ask, I'm sure you know something about this, and this is not part of your assignment, but all of this arose because we have a town that is 1 mile away from, like, the major feature of the town, which is the university. Why do we have this dual location here in Ames?
Well, first, obviously, when they got the college came through before Ames was officially founded, that was already established. And so that land was over there, you know, kind of near floodplain area. And so that it was a lot of cheaper land that farmers were willing to give to the university to establish a college. It wasn't some of the better land. See, that was in 1848. And in so
that's the Homestead Act, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Right, okay.
And so, or actually, no, that's the
Morrow.
I can't think it off the top of my head, but yeah, the act there to establish land grant colleges. And then we get 8 years later, Ames is founded, and Ames's location was determined partly because of the college being nearby, but they were more so interested in being near the confines of the Squaw and the Skunk for water for the steam engines. So that for the trains to come through. Yeah, Ames was nothing but just a depot stop, basically, you know, and they thought, the college is here.
They could refill the steam engines.
Yep, the boilers on there. So that's kind of a lot of why they're there. And honestly, for a lot of the early college years, they were kind of going about the German style of campuses where it was isolation, put everyone in the same building, teachers, faculty, you'll have your classes, you'll eat here. And then it's not later until the Beerchard era in the late 1890s that then they start to, hey, we need like expand, you know, do it a little different model of university. So at the very beginning from Iowa State, they did want to be isolated themselves. So.
Huh. Well, that is quite a saga.
It is.
And it all ends or continues, perhaps, August 1st when we get that bridge on 6th Street reopened.
I can't wait. I live on Hazel.
Okay. According to Susan Guiasa, if the weather holds and all else goes well. So, thank you, Alex Pfeiffer of Ames Historical Society.
Yeah, thank you, Greta. And we're open Monday through Friday, 1 to 5, and on Saturdays, 10 to 4. We're just located just right by KHOI and the Ames Public Library and Douglas Avenue.
Do you have any interesting exhibits up at the time?
Kind of tied in with this one. We did one on early automobiles that's up right now that talks about some of the first people that get them, the first salesman, first garage, and first mechanic. So
okay.
A little bit tied in with there.
Interesting.
Yep, thank you.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Greta Anderson. We started off the show with a Community Service Appreciation segment by Kay Puttock featuring Marissa Conrad of Primary Healthcare, a medical establishment serving lower-income people of central Iowa. We then spoke with Bryce Daniels and Carl Helgevold, two officials from Wright County, about the plans of Prestige Farms to build a large new processing plant near Eagle Grove. We also spoke with Jess Mazur of Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement about local people's opposition to this plant and the new hog confinements it will bring to the area. Finally, Alex Pfeiffer told us about the various routes from town to campus that were planned and how they unfolded. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with links relating to today's stories. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on our show postings in your news feed. Thanks to webmaster Ron Carson for making that possible. Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeGeest. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Let's Do Something Impossible by William Elliott Whitmore from his album Field Songs. And Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.